Okay, so we're moving on now to the last agenda paper five, another new issue on power purchase agreements. I'm going to hand over to Wei Shun to tee up the paper, please.
Thank you. We will now discuss agenda paper five. The committee received a request about an electricity retailer for customers accounting for a power purchase agreement in a gross pool electricity market. The request asks whether, applying paragraph B9A of IFRS 16, the customer has the right to obtain substantially all the economic benefits from use of the wind farm throughout the 20-year term of the power purchase agreement. Paragraphs 5 to 11 outline the fact pattern described in the request, and paragraphs 14 to 27 include our analysis. Based on our analysis, the power purchase agreement results in the customer settling with the supplier the difference between the fixed price and the spot prices per megawatt of electricity the wind farm supplies to the grid throughout the 20-year term of the contract. That contract, however, does not give the customer the right to obtain any of the electricity the wind farm produces and supplies to the grid. Although the customer has the right to obtain the renewable energy credits, which represent a portion of the economic benefits from use of the wind farm, the customer does not have the right to obtain substantially all the economic benefits from use of the wind farm without having the right to obtain any of the electricity the wind farm produces. We conclude that applying paragraph B9A of IFRS 16, the customer does not have the right to obtain substantially all the economic benefits from use of the wind farm. The PPA does not therefore contain a lease. I will now direct you to question one on page 10 and ask whether you agree with our analysis of the application of the requirements in IFRS 16.
Thank you very much. And I'm going to be far less polite than Wei Shun. I'm not going to ask you if you agree with the analysis. I'm going to ask people, please, to comment if they have things that they would like to raise that are sort of different to what's in the paper or additions to what's in the paper. Okay, so starting with you, Paul.
Thank you, Sue. I think the analysis is incomplete. Candidly, when I read the submission before we got the staff paper, the first question that popped into my mind was not a question of whether there was a lease, but rather whether the customer should consolidate the supplier. You've got an entity for which many, if not most, of the activities are predetermined. The supplier is intimately involved in purpose and design. And so I think it is very important that we have a more fulsome analysis, starting with being clear that the first question that the customer would need to consider is whether or not they would consolidate the supplier, because if they consolidate the supplier, that obviates any question about a lease. Then if the customer concludes that it does not consolidate, and in this fact pattern, I would observe, I think it is very likely that the customer might well consolidate the supplier. But if they do not consolidate the supplier, then I would like to see the analysis about the lease question touch both on the question of control of the asset. And I think there the agenda decision could cross-reference to the agenda decision from a couple of years back, where there's discussion of consideration of control of an asset where activities are largely predetermined in a shipping arrangement. Then to the question of whether the customer receives substantially all of the economic benefits, which I think the analysis here is fine. And then finally, if one concludes that you don't consolidate and that there's not a lease, I think it would be useful to observe that the contract then is very likely to be a derivative accounted for at fair value, and it is potentially a cash flow hedge. So I worry about being so narrow in answering the question that readers of the agenda decision will forget to take a step back and think about all of the things they will need to do in the analysis to come to a proper conclusion about the accounting for this arrangement. Thank you.
Just on that, I think you're right that we probably should be clear that we're only answering one particular question. So, for example, we haven't looked at whether there's a question of consolidation or not on hedge accounting, I think we might have seen something similar to this and we addressed it a few years ago. But I think the key point that Paul's raising, probably rightly, Petrina, is if we publish a tentative agenda decision, we probably should be pretty clear, you know, exactly what we considered, and that it was a very particular question, not, you know, all the questions that you might come up with to decide the appropriate accounting, if I could rephrase it. Carsten?
Yes, sure. Thanks. So I think that makes sense what you just said. So and I also agree with the staff analysis and conclusions on the specific question that was asked. I essentially just have one observation on paragraph 27 of the staff analysis, which states that the criteria in paragraph B2 of IFRS 16 are not met. Now I agree that those criteria are not met in this fact pattern, but was wondering whether B2 even applies and whether in this fact pattern there actually are two contracts rather than just one contract. That is, whether the customer's expected purchases of electricity can be viewed as a contract in the first place. I also worry a little bit about potential implications of the analysis in paragraph 27 on other fact patterns. In particular, I think that where the customer had an obligation to purchase all of the electricity, either for its own use or for resale, the analysis might potentially be different. But this is not the fact pattern at hand. So I guess the analysis in paragraph 27 just says that the conditions in B2 are not met, without further analyzing whether there are two contracts that could be combined in the first place. I also know that this paragraph is not repeated in the agenda decision itself, you know, so which softens my concerns about possible unintended consequences. So I'm overall comfortable with this and supportive of the proposed wording in the tentative agenda decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Carsten. Yang Su?
Thank you. I also want to say that I agree with the staff analysis and conclusion. Just about what Paul commented and also Sue said, you know, I agree with what Sue said. You know, what staff has done was just answer to the question and nothing more than that. So if we just emphasize that on the agenda decision, there will be no problem at all. However, I still have one comment about the wording of the agenda decision. That is about the overall tone of the agenda decision. You know, the agenda decision sounds like lease accounting is not allowed to any types of gross pool electricity market. That is what I first felt when I read the agenda decision. I think what is more important is not the name of the market, instead the terms and conditions of the contract. But since we use the terms like gross and net, you know, it looks like that net pool contract is allowed, but gross pool contract is not allowed. And I'm afraid that we can give some kind of misperceptions to the people. So my suggestion is either delete gross pool or net pool in the agenda decision and concentrate on, you know, the fact patterns itself and describes why we make the decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Yang Su. Bob?
Thanks, Sue. I agree with the staff's analysis. I agree with their conclusions. I think to do any otherwise would be a contradiction of the IFRIC agenda decision back in 2005, in which we looked at an arrangement, the committee looked and concluded that in that case, for this was on IS-39 and
can other people hear Bob? Because I can't. Bob, yeah, I think you can't help.
Nope. I can't.
But we can't.
Bob, we can't hear you. He's been cut off in mid-flight. Okay, Guy, do you want to come in and then we'll let Bob back in when he reconnects, or we can hear him again? Guy?
Okay, thanks, Sue. I agree, I believe, where we've ended up here. I think what we're describing is, if I'm understanding the fact pattern correctly, a situation where the only contractual rights are what I'll describe as a non-deliverable contract. And that there aren't other contractual rights that are deliverable in some form that match the wind farm's generation over the term of the non-deliverable arrangement. When I use the sort of terminology non-deliverable, you know, I do think back to that August 2005, you know, agenda decision, thinking about the own use exception and all of that. But in thinking about that, you know, I'm not thinking that, oh, okay, I have to start in IFRS 9, figure out, you know, if this contract's in scope of IFRS 9, and if it is, I can never go back to IFRS 16. I think the ordering of the scoping is different. I have to decide if I have a lease in IFRS 16 first. But, you know, I think the non-deliverable nature of this contract is important to analyzing whether I meet the conditions for a lease. And if the only contractual arrangement in place is a non-deliverable arrangement, I do agree with the analysis that says, well, absorbing variability from a non-deliverable arrangement itself does not appear to provide the right to substantially all the economic benefits from use of the asset. That doesn't seem to fit the context of that test in IFRS 16. So I overall agree in the context where the only contractual rights are a non-deliverable contract for the underlying load of the wind farm. Maybe just to pick up on Yong Su's point, I did pause on the wording in the agenda decision that, you know, seems to attribute this issue to a gross pool market and only a gross pool market, and that caused me some pause. I would have thought, you know, if I have a deliverable contract, which I understand, you know, could be present even in a gross pool market in some cases, it all depends. I might go down a different path. So I didn't think it was necessarily a good idea in the agenda decision to seemingly imply this is always an issue in a gross pool market, and potentially by implication implying it's never an issue in a net pool market. I think in a net pool market, if all I had was a non-deliverable contract and no other contractual rights and obligations, I'd probably come to a similar conclusion. So I think just clarifying that sort of wording in the fact pattern, which, you know, I think some could perhaps inappropriately read as again this only being an issue in a gross pool market and never an issue anywhere else, and always an issue in a gross pool market, I don't think is necessarily what we want to convey. So I'd probably focus on the sort of non-deliverable nature of the contract, and that being, it's just a swap of the two prices, and there are no other contractual rights or obligations for electricity that match the load of the wind farm in question. And I think if we describe the fact pattern in that manner, I think it would better convey sort of the scenarios that this would apply to.
Thanks, Guy. On that non-deliverable point, I think I agree with you that in the fact pattern, the fact that there isn't, you know, a committed delivery arrangement is sort of adds to the analysis, if you like, adds to the fact that it's not a lease. I think the only thing I'd be cautious about it would be not to imply that if there was delivery between I've got a little diagram somewhere, but I can't find it to remember the right words, between the sort of ultimate supplier and the customer, given it's a fungible item that's being received, that in itself would mean that you'd flip to the lease accounting. So I think it's a consideration in this fact pattern, but I think we'd need to be careful not to imply that would, if there was deliverability, it would always therefore make it into a lease. Just a thought. Bob, do you want to try again? Oh, Bob, I'm hoping you can speak. It's your last meeting. It would be terrible if we weren't going to get your last words of wisdom. No, Bob.
Okay, good, thanks. I think I'm back now. Can you hear me?
Yes, you are now. Yes, yes. Go quick. Well, you're still on.
Before the tech gremlins get me again. I agree with the staff analysis. I think to do otherwise would be inconsistent with the committee's agenda decision back in August 2005, which talked about delivery. I think in that agenda decision, there was another concept principle that was brought up that you can't combine two contracts. This was Karsten's point about bringing in paragraph B2 of IFRS 16, which I would support. I agree with the agenda decision, but I think it could be improved by bringing in the fact that you can't combine the contracts in this case.
Okay, thank you very much, Bob. Please, we managed to hear what you had to say in the end. Are you going to go through what you've heard and what you would, maybe I should get a show of hands first on whether the committee, the first question before I get ahead of myself. What I need to ask you next is question two. So does the committee agree with the staff's recommendation not to add a standard setting project to the work plan? Can I get a show of hands, please?
I am seeing everyone on screen voting for.
Okay, and then on the phones, Brian?
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, thank you. And Sophie, are you on the phone?
Yes, I agree also.
Okay, you agree too. Okay, thank you very much. All right. Katrina, do you have heard in terms of potential changes to the wording of the tentative agenda decision?
Yes, so let me tell you what I've heard and then anybody else can add if they've got other things. I've heard discussion from Young-Soo and Guy, I think, about the kind of reference to gross pull in the tentative agenda decision. At least I agree whether the label on the electricity market, whether it's gross pull or net pull or whatever else, is not the important part. It's just to, you know, describe the market. So I think we can remove references to gross pull from the agenda decision. Also, I think we could possibly, by the way, just describe the agreement, but perhaps not refer to it as a power purchase agreement, because somebody pointed out, of course, the terms and conditions of the agreement are not actually that any power is being purchased. So we can look at that. To Paul's point, and I think your suggestion, Sue, I think that what we can do there is perhaps move up what the question is in the request to the first paragraph. So at the minute, if you look at page 12, we perhaps have been confusing because in the opening sentence, we talked about this request being about the customer's accounting. And it's only in the sort of third paragraph that we hone in on the exact question. So I think we'll be able to move the exact question up to the first paragraph so we're clear the question asked is just about B9A of IFRS 16. And that will hopefully address your point, Paul, that at least makes it clear from the first paragraph that we've not looked at this wider than, you know, just that specific question asked. And then the final thing that I heard was actually, I think, suggestions possibly one way or the other. I had Bob suggesting that we add into the tentative agenda decision a comment about paragraph B2 of IFRS 16 that states that, of course, you can't combine contracts, especially in this situation when they're with different counterparties. But I had a comment from Karsten that almost implied he didn't see that comment in the paper as being relevant because he wasn't sure that there were actually two separate contracts in this situation. I suppose on that one, I could go either way depending on what the committee wants, because I think it's a factual statement to add in what B2 of IFRS 16 says that would set out, you know, the criteria or the conditions that need to be met for when you might combine two contracts. So maybe I'll leave it at that, Sue, and then people can say if they disagree, that maybe at the minute I'll go with saying that we'll run with Bob's suggestion that we can add a sentence to the tentative agenda decision that at least just, you know, quotes the circumstances of when you can combine contracts, reflecting paragraph B2 of IFRS 16.
Okay, thank you, Katrina. Bertrand, you wanted to make a comment on wording?
Yes, I would have incorporated the last two sentences of paragraph 25 of the agenda paper. It's contrast the customer in a gross pool electricity market has no such contractual right or obligation if it's unexpectedly, blah, 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 blah. And I would have made that on page 13, just after how do you say that? The prior last paragraph, I don't remember the exact term. So in, at the end of the paragraph saying or beginning with the power purchase agreement results in the customer settling with the buyer, the difference between the fixed price and so on and so forth. Because these last two sentences would explain the respective rights and obligations, which lead us to think that there's no lease contract there. So I think it would be a valuable additional explanation to the draft TAD, and eventually in this last in a similar kind of comments on the following paragraph when we conclude consequently the contract, I would have suppressed the portion that state does not convey to the customer the right to use the wind farm for a period of time. And it's not exactly IFRS 16, but we cannot even say does not convey to the customer the right to control the use of the wind farm, because we have just focused on a specific aspect of IFRS 16. And so maybe it would be more simple to then concentrate in saying consequently the contract does not contain lease, and that's all. And last, a small wording suggestion, because I found it very difficult to understand what is currently at the end of the last sentence of the paragraph where I asked to add some clarifications on rights and obligations. There is a double negation, and honestly, for it was difficult to read. I would have written something like, the customer does not have the right to obtain substantially all the economic benefit from use of the wind farm, as it does not have the right to obtain any of the electricity the wind farm produces during the 20-year term of the contract. And then explaining or adding in a way what is written in the last two sentences in paragraph 25 to explain a bit more that. Thank you.
Thank you, Bertrand. Lisa?
Okay, thanks, Sue. I'm not sure if my comment, I just have a one-word comment, but on page 13, if it possibly overlaps a little bit with Bertrand's, page 13, the second paragraph that starts the power purchase agreement results, if you go back to the middle, the sentence starts, that contract, however, does not give the customer the right. I think it would be much clearer if we say, or the obligation to obtain any of the electricity from the wind farm, because I think that makes it very clear as to why there's not a contract. That's all. Thank you.
I was just looking at that, thinking we need or obligation, Lisa. Great minds. Carsten.
Yeah, just a quick comment on the B2 point. I think we'll probably prefer not to put it in the agenda decision. But if we do, I think we should just be careful not to suggest that there are two contracts in this fact pattern, where, whatever the exact wording might be, because I think that's not clear whether it even applies, right? So if we do it, I think it should be on a very neutral basis without suggesting that there necessarily are two contracts. The other suggestion I have is around, maybe non-delivery or no physical delivery. I mean, I was wondering whether we might improve the wording by saying when we talk about that the customer does not have a right to obtain any of the electricity, that we repeat some of the wording early in the staff paper, which talks about that there is no obligation. So it does not give the customer the right or create an obligation to obtain any of the electricity, because I think that was a key fact in the analysis. I mean, I wouldn't object if we don't include it, but I think it would be helpful for people to understand why we got there.
Yeah, I think that's also what Lisa was suggesting. Okay, thank you very much. Tom?
Yeah, thank you very much. My comment is related to the concern expressed by Paul. If I understand Katrina well, in the tentative agenda decision, it will be reflected that only a specific question is answered. However, when you look to the fact pattern, you should first raise the question, should I consolidate or not? So maybe it could be checked with the submitter if this check was made. And then you would say deciding that or determining that consolidation is not required, and then you go to this, because that reminds people that you first look to the question whether to consolidate or not.
I mean, if it's helpful, Ton, as we always do every time we get a question, we always speak directly to the submitter, by the way, to make sure we sort of, you know, fully understand the question and how it's come up, and just to make sure we have all the information. And at least we did have that call in this instance, and at least we're unaware that there was, that they had any consolidation question in this respect. So at least that wasn't, obviously as mentioned in the submission itself, nor did that come up when we asked sort of open questions about whether there was anything else we should be aware of or consider.
Okay. I think we should be clear that it is just the lease in question. We haven't looked at anything else. We have to be careful with this consolidation point, because unless I'm missing something, even if you did have consolidation in separate financial statements, you might still need to think about whether or not there was a lease. So I don't want to imply it would necessarily nullify the question either. But I think we do need to be careful that it's very clear. We've just looked at one thing and we're not implying it's the only question you'd have to consider. So definitely don't want to say we're talking about the accounting, which is what the lead-in says at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, so we definitely need to change that. So hopefully if we change...
Okay. I think we know what we're trying to achieve. Brian, did you want to comment on this two contract point?
Yes, thank you. I mean, clearly Bob's point about B2 and the observation in paragraph 27 are completely correct and are going to be very important potentially in other fact patterns. However, I wasn't sure that this fact pattern actually specifies what the other contract is. So, for example, in an alternative fact pattern, somebody might have entered into a contract with the operator or with somebody else to buy electricity for the duration of the arrangement, and that would be the contract that would fail contract combination. Here, that other contract isn't specified, and I, perhaps wrongly, was guessing that the entity was going to go into the market and make spot purchases and therefore, in fact, wouldn't have a contract for the whole of the duration. It would have a series of individual contracts when it made the purchases. So I'm very happy to have the B2 point in from a kind of technical perspective, but I'm not sure it needs to be... Well, we need to say something else about the fact pattern, I think, to identify the candidate contract that failed combination, and for that reason, maybe on balance, it would be simpler to leave it out.
Okay, so Katrina, based on all of that, do you think we should take a show of hands on the... So we're going to need to tidy up the start of the paper to be clear exactly what we're commenting on and what we're not commenting on. There's a variety of views on the inclusion or not of B2, and I think some fair points raised about, you know, do we even know if there is more than one contract in the fact pattern, and, you know, what contracts are we talking about if we start talking about multiple contracts, which makes it a bit more complicated. So maybe we'll take a show of hands, assuming we don't put in a reference to B2, and see if we have support for the tentative agenda decision on that basis, but with the other proposals that we've been through.
Yeah, and was so if it's helpful,
we needed to comment on, and we're going to add in rights and obligations in the middle of that paragraph.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify that point. So in the middle of page 13, I think it is a good suggestion from a number of you to change that sentence that starts, that contract does not give the customer the right, will also mention, you know, nor does it give it the obligation. And we'll also just, Bertrand, your editorial point about the double negative, we'll also just have a look at that to check whether we can make it more easy to read.
Okay, so with those adjustments, can I get a show of hands for who supports the tentative agenda decision, please?
I am seeing everyone on screen.
And then on the phone, Brian?
Yes, I support this.
Thank you. And Sophie?
I also support, yes.
Excellent. Well done. And we finished on time, which is a miracle given where we were at. So thank you very much for that. So that's the end of everything we needed to cover from a technical perspective. Is that right, Katrina?
Yes, that's right.